From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 19th day of February 2019. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. University of Illinois agricultural economist Todd Hubbs will be here to take a look at the acreage battle and what it might mean for corn in the coming growing season. He also has a price tag as it's related to acreage, that per bushel that is for corn. We'll discuss the Ag Energies with Dave Chatterton of the Powerline Group. He's from right here in Champaign County. And we'll take a look at the weather forecast with Don Day out of Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Find us online at WILLAG.org. There you can listen to us on demand anytime you'd like, and you can also buy your tickets for the All-Day Ag Outlook. It's coming up just 2 weeks, that's right, 2 weeks from today at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. If you've not picked up your tickets, do it right now online at WILLAG.org, or you can call this number 800-898-1065. That's 800-898-1065. The cost is just $30. And get this, for the $30, Matt Bennett, Aaron Curtis, Brian Stark, Chuck Shelby, Ellen Dearden, Bill Gentry, Pete Manhart, Bill Mayer, Jackie Vakes, Kurt Kimmel, Mike Zuzlow, and Todd Hubbs will be there, along with folks like Murray Wise and Eric Snodgrass, and of course, Wayne Nelson, who is with L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. And Wayne, in fact, is with us this afternoon to take a look at the marketplace. You can see him on that Tuesday in person, but hear him right now. Hey, Wayne, good afternoon to you.
Well, I'm wanting to taste some of those Beef House rolls already for the first thing.
Oh, you betcha. You know, that $30 is just a bargain when you talk about this event, which has been around, and you've been to all of them since 1991, so we're in our 29th year, and there was one in 1990, but it was an evening event as well there at the Beef House. We didn't start with coffee and rolls on that one, but every time since then, coffee and rolls in the morning, and you get your Beef House meal at the afternoon. If you've not been to this event, it's a great one. It's a great way to get yourself centered, actually, for the coming marketing season, actually, to help you out finishing off some of the marketing for the old crop as well.
Yeah, that we'll talk about old and new, and hopefully have some better news than we have today, because today was a risk-off day in Chicago. It all started with the wheat export numbers, that they were smaller than what they were hoping for, and you know, we're way behind on what the USDA has been forecasting for that, so they're thinking that we're maybe going to have to add some stocks to our carryout in the wheat. And it started, and it just seemed like corn and beans joined in tow there to go on. So that's what started it, and then the funds started going, and when they hit numbers, why, boom, 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 down we went.
Yeah, so technically the beans actually went down pretty hard for a while. They did bounce back at the end of the day. I guess that's the silver lining in the things. Maybe not. I don't know.
Well, yes, it is. It's always bouncing back up is better than bouncing clear on down that way. So, and what's really amazing about this is the Gulf wheat's actually at a discount to the Russian origin wheat now. And you would think that the wheat wouldn't have been the one that would have knocked our socks off to start the day. But it sure did happen, and we did set some technical points. We saw a couple of the advisory firms, they increased their old crop beans 30% today and increased their new crop beans 20% on some of their target points that they had in the market.
Right. So when we talk about soybeans at this point, we're getting, at least on the technical side, while the moves aren't as large, for instance, 9 cents isn't so bad, but they start to hit some of these technical things because they're just not so far down anymore from where they are. Is there much worry that the beans will roll over, and how much does it depend on what happens in Washington, D.C. with Beijing and the trade agreements?
Can we say the word a lot? I mean, I think that that is, you know, we're sitting back here now, we're trying to decide, you know, how many beans do we really want to plant come spring? Are we going to have some guarantees that China's going to buy a certain amount of ag products from us? I think that those are some big things and some assurances we'd sure like to have before we go to the field. I want to make our crop selection of what we want to plant. You know, we're about 60% of the way along on our insurance prices. We're hanging right around $4, around $4 or $9.55 on the beans. You know, the $9.55 isn't it's a pretty decent guarantee considering everything. But, you know, that's 50 cents lower than last year. So it is going to make a little difference to us.
I made note that Arlen Suderman from FC Stone was tweeting about USDA's expected ending stocks per corn, or exports rather, for soybeans, and that we were widening the gap and continuing and off by about, what, 450 or something like that, million bushels of making it at this point. I'm wondering, that this is a big number, despite the fact we're already carrying out a 900 million, if you add 450 to that. Even if it just gets really big. Even if we were to get a settlement, do you think we would get enough of an agreement from China that they'd import that many soybeans from the United States at this time of year? And what happens with all the beans that don't come out of Brazil?
You know, China might say they're going to buy beans, but that doesn't mean they're going to pay us a dollar over what they can buy them in Brazil for. You know, and that is a great big question, because we just have carryout plus on beans if we produce. You know, in South America, they lowered a little bit down there again last week, and probably will intend to lower a little more. But if we plant a lot, we've got a lot. We don't have to grow hardly. You know, we've got a big carryout number there as it is. We don't have to grow very many to still have a big carryout for the next year. So, but we do need that to keep us from falling, you know, down 50 or 75 cents. I think the rally is probably going to be, capped with, you know, not going up marginally, but at least the part is we wouldn't go down so much. We can get the Russia or the Chinese deal. So, you know, the other thing we're looking at too is the USDA Outlook meeting Thursday and Friday, and we're going to get their ideas of what the carryout's going to be on Friday, along with all those export sales data that they're going to dump of the old stuff that didn't seem to make a whole lot of difference last time they dumped. But the Outlook meeting is going to be very big in seeing what they're showing as our carryout at the end of the year.
Yeah, so we'll see all of that coming up pretty shortly. So it'll be interesting to watch all of that show up. Corn numbers, I think, might be as interesting as anything, because the carryout in corn is not so large. Right?
So. We're actually, you know, we're bringing our carryout down on corn for this year. And the nice thing is the ethanol, we're at a 40-cent discount to Brazilian ethanol now. Counter-seasonally, Brazilian ethanol seems to be going down, going up. And, you know, we're staying here, and we haven't got real good margins right now, but we are the best place in town to buy ethanol, and that is very good for corn also.
Anything else we ought to talk about before I let you go for the afternoon?
Well, you know, the hogs took a big hit on the more African swine flu, maybe some pork being put in some dumplings from China, and also the possibility of African swine flu in Canada. So that's what took the hogs down so hard.
All right. We look forward to talking to you next week, and then to having you in person over at the All Day Ag Outlook on Tuesday, March 5th.
Hey, we'll be looking forward to seeing all the people we see every year at this time.
You betcha. That, of course, is Wayne Nelson. He's with L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report for Tuesday afternoon, and he will be one of a dozen analysts that join us at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. If you've not gotten the ticket yet, be sure to pick it up today. It would be a great event, if you've never been to it, to introduce you to some of the Will Ag panels. We'll have all the folks that you normally hear on the air here. Matt Bennett will be there, Aaron Curtis, Brian Stark, Chuck Shelby, Ellen Dearden, Bill Gentry, Pete Manhart, Bill Mayer, Jackie Vex, Kurt Kimmel, Wayne Nelson, Mike Zuzulo, and Todd Hubbs, along with Murray Wise to talk about land values, and Eric Snodgrass from Agrible to take up the weather forecast. It's a good way to get started for the year, and it's only $30, plus you get a Beef House roll and coffee in the morning and your meal from the Beef House at the noon hour. How could you possibly go wrong? This is at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana on Tuesday, March the 5th. We start off around 8 o'clock in the morning Eastern, rather Central Time, and 9 o'clock in the Eastern Time, and we'll wrap up fairly quickly after the noon hour. So be sure to get those tickets right now today online, willag.org, for just $30 or 800-898-1065. In today's agricultural news, let's start with trade, China, and the southern border wall. All those things were on the president's mind Friday when he declared the southern border an emergency issue. Stephanie Ho from the United States Department of Agriculture pulled some sound bites as it's related to trade.
Trade negotiations between the United States and China are continuing this week in Washington.
It's going extremely well. Who knows what that means, because it only matters if we get it done, but we're very much working very closely with China and President Xi, who I respect a lot.
President Donald Trump spoke from the White House on Friday following U.S.-China trade talks in Beijing last week. U.S. duties on $20 billion worth of Chinese imports are set to rise if no deal is reached by March 1st. This is Stephanie Ho for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
Those were the president's thoughts about trade on Friday as he was introducing his declaration of emergency on the southern border. On Sunday, he was in Florida talking about Venezuela and the problems there. He took a moment to introduce U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer to the crowd. Lighthizer was in the audience.
We're making a lot of progress. Nobody expected this was going to be happening. We're making a lot of progress. In the meantime, billions and billions of dollars are coming into our treasury. It's very simple. All works. That never happened before. We don't know the feeling in this country, but now we know the feeling.
Those billions and millions of dollars come from the duties assessed on the Chinese goods USDA Stephanie Ho mentioned and are generally paid by the importing company. The president often implies these are paid by China. If that were the case, then state-owned companies like COFCO could import soybeans from the United States to China, and the tariff paid would make money for the government of China. Let's switch gears now, but we will stay with the president's declaration on Friday. Texas Republican Representative Will Hurd talked about private property rights, farmers, and Mr. Trump's national emergency on the southern border declaration during this weekend's Face the Nation on CBS.
There's going to be over 1,000 ranchers and farmers potentially impacted if the government comes in and takes their land. And listen to how they do it. They say, hey, we need this land. Here's what we're going to give you. And they get to automatically take it. And then the rancher or the landowner has to go in and fight in court to make sure that they're at a minimum getting what they owe or owed because of the price of the land.
Representative Hurd's Texas district shares 820 miles of border with Mexico. He is a Republican and a former undercover officer for the CIA. He says President Trump's wall declaration has the potential to remove approximately 1.1 million acres of arable land in the United States. Let's return to trade, but this one has to do with the auto industry and soybeans. The Commerce Department on Sunday sent Mr. Trump a long-awaited report on whether auto imports are a threat to U.S. national security. The key question now is what's in the report and whether it will prompt Mr. Trump to slap new tariffs on cars and auto parts, particularly from the European Union. European Commission President Jean-Claude Juncker said today that he expects Trump to keep a promise he made last year not to impose tariffs on European cars while the U.S. and the EU pursue trade negotiations. But he said that if Trump does impose tariffs, the EU will no longer feel bound by its commitments to buy more U.S. soybeans. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. The number of corn acres planted this spring will be a key factor in determining where the price of corn goes. University of Illinois agricultural economist Todd Hubbs took up that issue in this week's Farm Doc Daily article. He starts with a historical graph. It shows the principal crop acres in the United States and how those have changed since 1997. Both corn and soybean acreage have increased. Combined, they're up about 10% over the past two decades. Well, Illinois' Todd Hubbs uses that history to help put the number of corn and soybean acres into perspective.
When we look at the harvest soybean to corn futures price ratio this year, it's been about 2.37. There's a definite signal in this graph just from 2006 through 2018. If you're above 2.4 in that ratio, less corn acreage. If you're below 2.3, more corn acreage, and we're sort of sitting right in that middle zone. And we've seen problems with field work in large parts of the Corn Belt this fall. We've seen fertilizer and other input costs go up on corn. So the idea that we're going to see a massive increase in corn acreage, which is held by most market observers, it could happen. But under the current price structure, we might not see the kind of corn acreage we think we're going to see.
Hub says he used the 2019-2020 futures prices to forward calculate a season's average cash price for new crop corn. His calculation points to $3.81 a bushel. He then figured a stocks-to-use ratio that would fit that number.
I sort of think around an 11% stocks-to-use ratio in 2019-20 would give us $3.81. If we thought consumption was constant at 14.8 billion bushels from this marketing year to the next, that would put corn acreage around 91.7 million acres is what the market's priced in at a 174.6 yield nationally for corn.
Finally, Hub says there isn't a lot of weather premium priced into new crop corn futures. He also says there isn't much of a premium built in for a possible trade deal with China. Hub thinks that may be just as bullish for corn as it is for soybeans. Right now, he thinks the 2.37 soybean corn ratio feels high if the expectation is for a substantial increase in corn acreage. Dave Chatterton is now here. He is with the Powerline Group right here in Champaign, Illinois, to talk about the agricultural energies. Hey, good afternoon to you, Dave. Thanks for being with us today. What's new in ag energies?
Todd, thanks for having me. And it's been a very interesting market in the energy complex since we last spoke. It's been a rather firm market during that time period. If you remember and flash back a little bit, the crude oil and the refined fuel markets bottomed out just after Christmas or the week between Christmas and New Year's. And we've had a pretty smart rally since that point. In terms of diesel fuel, that took us from a low of around 165 at one point all the way up to almost this $2 mark. And so at this point, we see most of the damage is probably done. There's been a lot of talk about OPEC and their cuts. We've had Venezuelan sanctions. We've had Iranian sanctions coming back into play here, and a lot of talk about global oil supply. What we haven't had is any problem with global oil supply. So funds have been active buyers in the market. We've put some premium back in the market, and it looks to us like things are probably attuned to flatten out here just a little bit. When we look at crude pricing globally, the top end of our trading range may be, let's say, $70 in Brent crude or around $60 in WTI, and we're only about $4 to $5 off of those levels right now. So that would be attuned to a 10 to 12 cent risk in refined fuels, so gasoline, propane, diesel fuel, et cetera. And again, see that as kind of towards the top end of the trading range here.
And what's the bottom end of the trading range?
Well, that's a good question. The economic side of the fence here looks to us. Our view here is that the economic outlook for the U.S. is certainly either going to grow at a slower rate or perhaps even turn a little bit negative here in the months ahead. We know we've got problems in China and Europe and in some of the other bigger economies of the world. So the downside, I think, doesn't probably take us all the way back down to, let's say, where we saw those lows in the spring of 2018. The market last year bottomed right around mid-February. And we went from there. We don't think we're going to quite go back to those levels, but certainly we could go back to a $50 or sub $50 handle in crude, and that would put diesel fuel, in terms of the futures market, as opposed to being near $2 today, probably back closer to or just below like a 180, 175 type of a number.
Is that where your expectation is to have producers lock thing needs in for the coming season if they haven't already?
Yeah, definitely. And so we're looking ahead in the market here. We certainly want to be attuned to what's going on. I think it's worth pointing out or talking about that, U.S. production and refining capacity, numbers continue to set records. We had a bunch of records that were set again in January. We'll get the February data here at the end of this month. But if you look at U.S. crude oil production, we're pushing towards that 12 million barrel per day mark. We've got record propane production because of that record crude oil production, and we're seeing record exports and a lot of different things going on here. But in general right now, we have a sense that the supply or the production is growing faster than the ability to let's say, export or offset some of that. And it's generally a market that has a little bit of downside looking forward here. So from a timing perspective, as we get into those summer months, get past the winter, maybe get past some of the OPEC talk and the rhetoric that we're talking about here in the first quarter of the year, certainly that soft patch, we want to look at the ability to lock some stuff in for next fall. Right now, we'd be a little bit patient.
Hey, thanks so much. That, of course, is Dave Chatterton. He is with the Powerline Group.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for this Tuesday afternoon. It's the 19th day of February. To buy those tickets for the All-Day Ag Outlook, it's 2 weeks away. That's right, just 2 weeks away now. Tickets are $30. Online at willag.org or 800-898-1065. We're now joined by Don Day. He's at Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. I won't ask you about the weather 2 weeks from now because sometimes we get a March blizzard, and that does cause a problem. However, this weekend, it looks like the upper Midwest is going to have some serious hassles. What can you tell me?
Yeah, it's going to be a serious storm, especially for Nebraska, eastern side of South Dakota, Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Iowa. We're going to see a storm come out of the western high plains. This storm is going to have a lot of moisture with it and a lot of very cold Canadian air. So livestock interests in those states I just mentioned need to be prepared for several inches of snow. There's going to be some wind with it and some pretty cool temperatures. You know, here we are on the backside of February, still a very cold time of year, and there's still lots of serious cold coming out of Canada, and that's going to be a big part of the storm. That's a part of the country that's had to go through a lot here over the last few weeks. So it's going to be a storm system making the news.
How much in the way of snowfall do you think they'll get?
Well, I think there are some areas that are looking at 6 to 12 inches or possibly more. This will be especially true in Iowa and portions of Wisconsin and Minnesota, and then maybe southeastern areas of South Dakota. This system has got a lot going for it. It's the type of storm that we'll tend to see towards the tail end of winter. We're all the right ingredients, moisture from the south, cold from the north coming together over one spot.
Is it a Friday, Saturday, or a Saturday, Sunday storm?
It's going to be mostly a Saturday, Sunday storm system. It's going to start Friday night in the west, places like eastern Colorado, western areas of Kansas, and then it's going to quickly grow into central Nebraska Friday night, and by Saturday morning, it'll be really kicking into gear.
All right, and then turn your attention to South America, where crop is in the ground and growing mid-season, or harvest, depending on where you are, in Argentina and Brazil.
Well, Brazil has turned the corner here recently with more rain. They really needed some. I don't know if it's going to be enough to help out some of the areas that have been suffering dryness. But the pattern has gotten more favorable for Brazil to see some precipitation. And here in the next week, we'll get some more. Argentina drying out a little bit, but they have fared much better so far this growing season when it comes to rainfall.
Hey, thanks so much.
Thank you, Todd.
Don Day is with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world coming up on Tuesday, the 5th day of March. That's just 2 weeks away now. You can join us at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana for our 29th annual All-Day Ag Outlook. If you've not ever been to this event, it's a great one to learn about. And to start with, the cost is just $30. And for that $30, you get fed twice, really, coffee and Beef House roll in the morning. We'll go through our morning event. We'll finish up fairly early in the afternoon. Just after lunch, we'll talk about the price of corn. Before lunch, the price of soybeans. And in between those two, a great Beef House lunch. It's all over at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. And the tickets are just $30. But you have to buy one today at 800-898-1065 or online at Will Ag. Again, the cost cost is $30, and the phone number to call is 800-898-1065. We'll have a dozen analysts there, including Matt Bennett, Aaron Curtis, Brian Stark, Chuck Shelby, Murray Wise, Alan Dearden, Bill Gentry, Pete Manhart, Bill Mayer, and Jackie Vakes, along with Kurt Kimmel, Wayne Nelson, Mike Zuzulo, Todd Hubbs, and Eric Snodgrass. Join us at the Beef House if you can. willag.org to buy your tickets today.